This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to NHL This Week. It's our playoff preview spectacular, as in T-minus 24 hours from now, the Winnipeg Jets and Minnesota Wild will have puck drop at Bell MTS Place. And the Stanley Cup playoffs, the 2018 Stanley Cup playoffs, will be underway.
One more sleep, boys.
One more sleep. I don't even know if I'm going to sleep. Are you going to sleep? You might just be too excited. You won't maybe sleep at all.
I'm definitely not going to be sleeping. Doesn't it feel like we've been waiting for this Jets-Wild series for like 10 days?
Well, we've known for a while that it was likely to be these two teams, and I mean, it availed us the opportunity to do our comprehensive preview on Saturday's Illegal yep. Curve Hockey Show. We'll send out a link to that. We spent 90 minutes going through the Jets and the Wild series in excruciating detail. So in case you missed any of that from Saturday's program, I'll send out a link where you can download that podcast version of the show and listen to that. Today, we're going to do a quick segment on the Jets and the Wild and then focus on the other seven playoff series set to get underway tomorrow and Thursday throughout the NHL. Ezra Ginsberg, Sean Assor in studio. I'm your host, Drew Mendel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve and our website that's got all the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is illegalcurve.com. It'll get you ready. Just make sure you got the page bookmarked because that's going to be your home away from home for the next, well, for the at least the entirety of the first round, and Jets fans certainly hope longer than that. Start with this Jets Wild series, of course, gets underway tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place, the 6 o'clock puck drop, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290.
Is anyone going to get any work done tomorrow?
I think productivity is going to be pretty low tomorrow in the
like
city.
The,
of
like the offices are shutting down at like 3 tomorrow, Sean. Maybe 2.
Minimal. Minimal work.
It's going to be all about, you know, how are you getting ready for the game? I mean, the anticipation level is, of course, through the roof on this one, not only because it's the playoffs and that doesn't necessarily come around here that often, at least it hasn't come around here that often, but the Jets have expectations on them. They have expectations to be victorious in this first round series. The pundits say the Jets are the better team. The pundits are predicting the Jets to win this series against the Wild. How do you think the Jets are going to handle the weight of expectations that comes with being a favorite in this first round series?
I think they'll be fine, Drew, but you make a good point because the last time this team made the playoffs, Jets 2.0 made the playoffs, yeah. Of course, back in 2015, they didn't clinch a playoff spot until very late in the season.
Game 81.
Right, and that's much different than this year when, as you mentioned, they've been kind of sitting here waiting to play the Minnesota Wild, but it looked like maybe they would catch the Nashville Predators, but the Predators just wouldn't lose, so the Jets finish second in the Central, and they meet the team that we all expected them to meet. But that is going to be huge here, Drew, because, you know, with the exception of Paul Stastny, Dustin Byfuglien, Blake Wheeler, Matty Perreault, I mean, there are a lot of guys here that have never played in the playoffs, right? So you're talking about Patrick Laine, Nikolai mm-hmm. Ehlers, Kyle Connor, Josh Morrissey, Connor Hellebuck, the Jets' Vezina Trophy finalist, right? Or at least we think he's going to be a Vezina Trophy finalist.
What do you know that we don't?
Exactly. Insider. Nothing. Trust me, Drew. Yeah. I would let you guys know everything that I know. But it's going to be a huge factor, Drew. And, you know, I agree with most pundits. And, you know, you mentioned on the Saturday show we gave our predictions for the series because we knew what the series was going to be. And I have the Jets winning in 5. But I think even with Ryan Suter in the lineup, Sean, the Jets' combination of size and speed and the way they've finished the season here, winning 11 of their last 12 games, I mean, on paper, the Jets should win this series.
It's approaching, boys. The white light at the end of the tunnel. It's here. It's coming. We're almost there. The anticipation, you can feel it around the city. It's exciting. And yeah, the pundits, the pros, even EA Sports saying that the Jets are the favorite to go all the way and hoist the cup. You see that EA Sports has picked the simulation.
They simulated the playoffs.
So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but
I think it's just a thing. I wouldn't put much stock into it.
Well, there's zero stock. Yeah. But it's just kind of weird to see. It's going to be a lot of fun. A couple of really good home teams going at it, some crazy barns. I mean, distance-wise, you'll see probably visiting fans in both rinks. It should be a great, great matchup with regards to a lot of fast-paced hockey, some quality centermen on both ends of the ice, and it's just going to be a ton of fun. And experience or not, when you talk about expectations, the expectations were raised for this team entering the regular season. And regardless of those first two games, not only did the Winnipeg Jets meet those expectations, they exceeded in every category. So to say now that the expectations are raised once again entering the playoffs, I mean, you have to look at what they did in the regular season and just expect that those expectations are going to be met once again.
I think that's a really good point that you mentioned, Shawnee, because it's not like the Jets haven't been a top team in the Central Division the whole year, right? The expectations have been high for this team for, I would say, 4 or 5 months here.
Rise together.
Since early on in the season,
right? Since
the
beginning.
And that's why it's so important to have a player like Paul Stastny in your lineup, right? He faced the Minnesota Wild in the first round last year.
When the Wild were the heavy favorite against the St. Louis Blues.
Right, and the Blues beat them in five, but he's also played the Wild as a member of the Colorado Avalanche. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a guy who's got, what, 55 games of playoff experience? I mean, that factors in big time. And Dustin Byfuglien, he's won a Stanley Cup. I think at times that gets overstated, the experience factor, because at the end of the day, I think the better team will win. And as we talked about, I mean, when you look at the forwards and you look at the defense, maybe the only area where you would see a draw is in goal. You are expecting the Jets to win this series, and it could be even 4 or 5 games, with the way things are going right now and the way they're playing.
The expectation, as we're talking about the Jets and the Wild playoff series, which gets underway tomorrow night, the expectation was that Toby Enstrom, when he was shut down a number of weeks ago, the expectation was that he would be ready for the playoffs. That's what Paul Maurice said at the time. And lo and behold, he's obviously not ready for game one. He hasn't been skating even at all. So it seems like the Jets' left side is going to be, for the foreseeable future, Josh Morrissey, Ben Chiarot, and Joe Morrow. How much pause does that give you?
None.
None?
I mean, Toby Enstrom is a third-pairing defenseman for this team. And, you know, Joe Morrow, I think, has done a good job since he's come over from the Montreal Canadiens. So I think Dmitry Kulikov's absence is a bigger deal for me. And
We knew Kulikov was going to be out of the lineup for, you know, 6 weeks when he had his back injury. Enstrom, what we had heard all along, was that he was being shut down so that he would be ready for the playoffs. And then we find out he hasn't even been on the ice.
But regardless of that, I mean, I personally think Kulikov's a better defenseman than Enstrom.
I agree with you. Right.
I think they'll miss Kulikov more, and Kulikov should be back for the second round if the Jets do get to the second round. I mean, it's always good to have Toby Enstrom in your lineup, but I think Joe Morrow has quietly done a great job. I think Tucker Poolman, who's going to start the playoffs as the Jets' seventh defenseman, has actually done a pretty solid job when he's been called upon. So I think the Jets will still win the series without Toby Enstrom. And that's not to take anything away from Toby, but I just think the Jets have enough depth on D to overcome that.
So you don't think that the Wild, Sean, will be able to expose maybe the absences on the left side of the Jets' defense?
No, I don't, because you look at just the amount of game action both Morrow and Ben Chiarot have had leading into this postseason. It's not like they're getting thrown into the fire maybe 2-3 games left. These guys have shown that they can play, especially I'm looking more so at a Ben Chiarot. He's shown that he can elevate his game to a level that we haven't seen yet. I'm not saying he's elite by any means, but he's a guy who embraced a role, an added role this year, and has performed under the expectations. And Joe Morrow, he's coming in. He's a skilled, good skater. You know, we've seen the highs and some of the deficiencies that he can bring, but for a guy that can move the puck pretty quickly and the experience he has so far with the Jets coming in from the trade deadline, I'm not too concerned.
And when Toby Enstrom comes back into the lineup, I mean, Joe Morrow is the first defenseman to come out, and he knows that, and they'll miss him. I mean, if you're talking about Enstrom versus Morrow, sure, mm-hmm. with Enstrom's experience, you would take Enstrom over Morrow, but it doesn't look like Enstrom's going to be out long-term. He might be back as early as Game 2 or Game 3.
We'll see. What Paul Maurice was sort of vague about the possible return date for mm-hmm. him. Jared Spurgeon, sounds like he's going to play for the Minnesota Wild.
Right, they haven't made it official yet, Drew, but it looks like there's a good chance he'll play tomorrow night. And that's huge, right? Because when you're talking about Ryan Suter, he's obviously the big hog on the back end. But Jared Spurgeon, in my opinion, is their second best defenseman. And, you know, Jonas Brodin and Matt Dumba have done a great job there as their top pair. But I think even with Jared Spurgeon back in the lineup, it's going to be really hard to shut down the Jets' offense. And the Wild have done a great job all year at suppressing shots. Mm-hmm. And the criticism of this team has been that Devin Dubnyk's numbers are a little bit inflated because the Wild play such a great defensive structure in front of him, and he doesn't get a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm.
But I still think that even though Devin Dubnyk, you know, has had a great year this year, probably not as good as last year, and he's a great goaltender, I mean, you're talking about the third best offense in the league, or whatever it was, second best offense in the league. At the very least, the Jets are a top three offense in the NHL. And I think when you have not only three scoring lines, you have four scoring lines. Jack Roslovic can't even get into this lineup. So I just think offensively, they're going to be too much for the Wild.
If you're the Minnesota Wild, Sean, is your goal to start the series to play the Jets at even 5-on-5? If you said to the Wild, you know, in this series, you are going to, you're going to even up with the Jets 5-on-5. Would they say that we'll take that, no questions asked, because that's where they probably can't match up with the Jets quite as well?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just look at the depth and the amount of lines, especially the Jets entering the season, or the series, pardon me, with home ice advantage. Paul Maurice will control the matchup game for the majority, or for the majority of the series. And it's, if you're the Minnesota Wild without your top shutdown power play specialist, the guy who's having a career year with stats, you just have to, I don't like to use the word tread water, but if you can draw a blank at even strength, you have to take that as a victory if you're the Minnesota Wild.
And Sean, this might go without saying, but I don't think the Wild have any chance in the series if Devin Dubnyk doesn't steal a couple games. I think the Wild can win a game, but if they want to win four games, I think Devin Dubnyk is going to have to outplay Connor Hellebuck, and not many goalies have outplayed Hellebuck this year.
No, certainly Hellebuck's numbers have been solid. What about his inexperience factor? I mean, he has had, you know, AHL experience, of course, but
he's also got World Hockey Championship experience with the USA, and he was excellent both times he represented the U.S. at the World Hockey Championship. And you mentioned UMass Lowell, Drew, in the NCAA. He won the Mike Richter Award. I mean, Connor Hellebuck has won at various levels, including the American Hockey League. So I think he's fine.
His confidence, he's a very confident young goaltender. You think that confidence will serve him as we approach this first game of the playoffs tomorrow?
It goes back to what I said before, though, guys. I really don't think that there's a big advantage in net. I think that's where the two teams are probably the most even. I think Hellebuck has had a better year than Devin Dubnyk, but Dubnyk's an excellent goaltender. So maybe you give the slight advantage to the Jets here, Drew, but it's really, you know, with the forward group and the group of defensemen that the Jets have, especially with Suter out, where they have the big advantage.
And it's also Connor Hellebuck has learned to play the way the Jets play in front of him. He knows where the shots are coming from. That's been a whole big part of his development this year, is understanding of the game being played in front of him, as well as the forwards understanding what they need to do to make, and the defense, to make it easier for a guy like Connor Hellebuck to read the play, know where he needs to be, break down what's happening in front of him. It's a really, really, and it's funny that they're buddies, Dubnyk and Hellebuck. They train in the offseason,
yeah.
And you know, they're rooting for each other in the media, they're saying, but now they're not friends. And so there's a fun little side story to that. But just from Connor Hellebuck's perspective, all we've heard about him for the past 2-3 months is how good he's feeling, and he's really liking his game. He's liking where the team is in front of him. So you just have to think that confidence and his performance are going to carry over.
Sean, I know that as he picked the Jets in five, I echoed him on Saturday's broadcast saying the Jets in five. Give you your opportunity now. How do you see the series playing out?
I will repeat, or I guess three-peat, Jets in five.
There you have it.
I love how everybody's kind of a little reticent to pick the Jets in four, because you just don't see that many sweeps anymore.
Well,
so I would say the Jets
and
in
I think
five
that would be
is
underestimating.
The common...
That would be right. Underestimating what the Wild bring to the
tough
table.
Bar,
they're still a good team.
Yeah.
You don't sweep teams that all that often. I mean, there was one sweep last year with the Predators that became the buzzsaw of the Predators rolling over the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round. The games all get underway tomorrow evening at 6 o'clock. You can hear it live here on TSN 1290. The three-headed monster, Dennis Bayak, Paul Edmonds, and Brian Munns will bring you the call. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Predators-Avalanche series. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our playoff preview show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Go with the same mindset we did last year. I mean, whether you're at the top or the bottom, both teams have a chance to win at any given point. And I think we have to go in with something to prove and play desperate, play hungry, and that we want to get back to where we were last year.
Nashville Predators defenseman Ryan Ellis addressing the media prior to their first-round playoff matchup against the Colorado Avalanche. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Specializing in customization services and branded team apparel, Keener Jerseys is changing the game with world-class craftsmanship and unparalleled service. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit KeenerJerseys.com or check out their showroom at 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherbourne. Tell them that Illegal Curve sent you. Speaking of sweeps, like we were speaking about the previous segment, they don't happen all that often. But most people that you talk to, if there's going to be a sweep in this first round, most people would point to this Colorado-Nashville series as the one that is going to be a clean sweep for the Predators. Are the Avalanche being disrespected, or are the Predators just that dominant of a team as compared to the Avs?
Yeah, Drew, I would say that the Predators are just that good. I don't think the Colorado Avalanche are being disrespected. I mean, let's be honest here. They almost doubled their point total from last year. They had 48 points last year, and I believe they had 95 points this year, if I'm not mistaken, 95 or 96. What an incredible turnaround for Jared Bednar and the Avalanche, but I think the Avalanche were in tough, and then Eric Johnson gets injured, and then Semyon Varlamov gets injured, and you're not going to have Varlamov for the rest of the season, and Eric Johnson is definitely not going to play in round one. And, you know, give Samuel Girard a lot of credit. Rookie defenseman stepped in nicely, and Tyson Berry's had a nice season, but I just don't think they have enough depth on defense. And after that top line of Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen and Gabriel Landeskog, I just don't think they have enough scoring depth.
Before we move on, I have to give a shout-out to Casey at the Bat on Twitter. He reminds us Anaheim swept the Flames last year as well. So I did misspeak, and shout-out to Casey for correcting me and not cursing at me on Twitter, which is always a nice change, somebody being polite in calling you an idiot on Twitter.
Did you say the Twitter name was Casey at the Bat?
Casey at the Bat.
Oh, at the Bat.
Yeah, like the old...
So he's at Bat.
Yeah, like the old story, the old children's, I guess it wouldn't be a limerick. No? Nothing?
I have no idea what that Twitter name means. Myself.
No, okay, alrighty. I'll explain it to you later what I'm talking about. But anyways, thank you, Casey, for reminding us of that. Sean, are the Avs, I mean, nobody had them as a playoff team this year. They sneak in game 82 by defeating the St. Louis Blues. Are they just sort of the proverbial happy to be their team with nothing to lose? Does that maybe allow them to play a little more free with their actions? I mean, if they get swept, nobody's going to say it's a disappointing year because nobody had them as a playoff team to begin with.
I actually think that's pretty accurate. It's such an interesting series. A team that got in as an 8 seed last year and, you know, pushed their way all the way to the cup final and made an exciting run versus a team that was absolutely abysmal last year and had an incredible turnaround season. Yeah, I think that has to be the mentality, that they're just shocked and maybe a little proud of themselves that they made it to the postseason and impressed with what Nathan MacKinnon did and that top line. You talked about that top line. It's insane. Nathan MacKinnon, 97 points. Mikko Rantanen, 84 points. And then 62 points for Gabe Landeskog. But then you look at their following other lines, and it's a serious drop-off. And then conversely, you look at Nashville and the depth that they have and the scoring by committee. You just have to think that they're happy to be there, and they can't really, I don't know if they can expect to go to push it to 7 or at least make it interesting. Jonathan Bernier is going to have a heavy workload. Jonathan Bernier. Yeah, confusing him with Steve Bernier, but that's the other Bernier.
That's the forward. Yeah, Jonathan Bernier is the goaltender.
If Steve Bernier is playing in net, then we got some trouble.
Well, how significant, I mean, you mentioned Bernier. He's obviously going to be the man in net for the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, Semyon Varlamov, Jonathan Bernier is no Semyon Varlamov, and that seems to me like that was the only way the Avalanche had a chance, is if Varlamov somehow, you know, stood on his head and it was fantastic. We know he's out for the season now, and Bernier, who played one playoff game last year for the Anaheim Ducks, game 7 against the Predators, and he really struggled in that series.
Jonathan Bernier is no slouch, Drew, and if you look at his numbers after he replaced Semyon Varlamov, they were actually very good, and he is a big reason why they made the playoffs. But you're facing, I think, the best 5-on-5 team in the entire league, and you acquire Ryan Hartman at the trade deadline, and Ryan Hartman, you know, just makes you even more dangerous. Eli Tolvanen's not going to play in the first round for the Nashville Predators, but when you're talking about the Predators up the middle, you're talking about Ryan Johansson, you're talking about Kyle Turris, you're talking about Nick Bonino, Mike Fisher on the fourth line, and you know, Sean, you mentioned that top line of Nathan MacKinnon, Mikko Rantanen, and Gabriel Landeskog. And if you're putting Tyson Barrie and Samuel Girard up against the top line, obviously Roman Josi and Matthias Ekholm are probably going to go up against the MacKinnon line. But, I mean, who are you matching up against that second line? Kyle Turris's line, if you're the Colorado Avalanche.
Loss of Eric Johnson here, it looms massive. Very large for the Colorado Avalanche. He's their Ryan Suter. He's not as good as Ryan Suter, but he's a guy who can log 25, 26, 27 minutes a game, and now he's out of the lineup, but it's not like this Avalanche defense was exceptionally deep to begin with.
Right, and you've got, you know, Mark Barberio or Patrick Nemeth paired up there with Nikita Zadorov, but I just don't think the Avalanche have the depth up front or on the back end to compete with the Nashville Predators. And, you know, stranger things have happened, and we have upsets every single year, Drew, but when you're talking about this Predators lineup, I mean, we know Pekka Rinne right now is a favorite to win the Vezina Trophy. Up and down this lineup, there's tons of skill. I mean, Kevin Fiala's had a breakout year. You know, Nick Bonino has just given them more depth up the middle, and we know how good that defense is. So I just don't think Colorado has, they don't have much of a chance in the series.
And you're talking about the depth, and that even goes within the crease too. UC Saros is a very capable backup netminder behind Pekka Rinne. Conversely, you look at the Avalanche, Andrew Hammond.
Yeah, he had a great run, of course, as the hamburger
the feel-good
in Ottawa.
Story stealing burgers, but
yeah, that was a few years back, and things haven't been as good for him since then.
Yeah, the burgers have gone bad.
The burgers certainly have gone bad. Predictions on this series, then. We're going to bring in Kevin Allen of USA Today after this interview, talk about the Eastern Conference. But predictions first on this Avalanche-Predator series, as...
I think a lot of people are picking the Preds to sweep the Avalanche, but I think the Avalanche are probably going to win a game. I wouldn't be surprised if they win a couple games, but I just think that the Predators are going to be too much for the Avalanche. I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, that top line of MacKinnon, Rantanen, and Landeskog get their points. But, I mean, this Predators team went to the Stanley Cup final last year, and they want to go back this year and hoist the Stanley Cup. So I'm going to take the Preds in five.
Shawnee?
I'll repeat once again, Preds in five.
Okay, and I'm going to call this one as a sweep. I think it's the Predators in four. I just don't think Colorado has the horses to match up with them, and the Predators really do seem like a team on a mission with a one-track focus. When we come back, as I said, we're going to be joined by Kevin Allen of USA Today. We're going to talk about the Eastern Conference playoff matchups, and still to come, much more on the West and Eric Dehatchik of TheAthletic.com. Kevin Allen of USA Today up next. You're listening to NHL This Week. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to NHL This Week. It's our playoff preview spectacular. Drew Mandel, Sean Assor, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve. Is our Facebook page, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to be joined on the line by Kevin Allen of USA Today. Kevin, good evening, and thanks very much for joining us.
Always a pleasure to be on the show with my favorite name for hockey, you know, Illegal Curve. I always think of Marty McSorley every time I come on your show.
That's always what we strive for. It's, you know, we got name recognition because it's such a unique name, you know. So we succeeded on one front at least over the years with that name.
Well, and I'm a product, you know, I'm a guy that's covered the league for a long time, so I'm a product of that 70s generation when we saw all those big banana curves and, you know, the Bobby Hall curves and such. So I have a fondness for Illegal Curves.
Well, we appreciate that, Kevin. Obviously, we brought you on to talk about the Eastern Conference playoff series. I want to start with the matchup between the number one team in the Metropolitan Division, the Washington Capitals, and then the team with the top in the top wild card spot, the Columbus Blue Jackets. Barry Trotz announces earlier today that Philip Grubauer is going to be his starting goaltender for Game 1 over Braden Holtby. And we know that Grubauer's had a tremendous regular season, and Holtby's actually struggled this year. Are you surprised that Barry Trotz went with Grubauer, or is there sort of a comfort in knowing that if he falters, they can go to a potential or a usual Vezina Trophy candidate in Braden Holtby?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think if you asked me, 3 months ago, I would have been surprised to hear that Grubauer was going to start. But anyone who's watched what's transpired there in the last several weeks sort of had an indication that this could happen. And I agree with your assessment on that. I mean, I think this is a classic case where the coach has got a real good option in Grubauer, who's playing well, and he always has in his back pocket the ability to go back to Holtby. And who knows? I mean, this could light a fire under Holtby, who, you know, has been inconsistent. And what's remarkable about that is I think, you know, Holtby's consistency has usually been his signature. So, you know, it was a strange turn of events this season because, you know, we've seen goalies lose their confidence before and not perform at the same level, but you certainly didn't expect that from Holtby.
Kevin, Tampa Bay is obviously a big favorite over the New Jersey Devils in the first round, but the Devils were actually very successful against the Tampa Bay Lightning during the regular season. Do you see a scenario where the Devils win this series or at the very least make it interesting?
Well, I do, simply because, you know, we're a parity league now, but, you know, I got to tell you, you know, I had to pause on this series a little bit. I mean, because I certainly knew that the Devils had played well against Tampa Bay, you know, this season. But, you know, I just feel like it's Tampa Bay's time to make an extended run here. And I know they faltered in the second half of the season, to be sure, and Vasilevsky wasn't the same goalie that he was in the, you know, first half. And, you know, here we go again with a Stamkos injury. And that poor guy, who's such an incredible player, has had such poor injury luck. And, you know, he'll start the playoffs. Even if he does play, he'll start, you know, injured. So, you know, it's kind of a tough situation. But, you know, when I look at that Devils team, I like the direction they're headed. I like what Ray Shiro has done. Taylor Hall deserves to be on every Hart Trophy ballot in some place or another. But I just don't think they have enough there. I mean, you know, top to bottom, the Tampa Bay Lightning are an exceptional team. I mean, they're great on the back end with Hedman and Strom and, you know, McDonough and so forth. And they've got a dynamic offense. And if we just flash back to the start of the season, you know, Vasilevsky can be such an incredible difference maker. Like, he had just a horrendous second half by his standards. And, you know, he still finished with, you know, 8 shutouts and was among the league leaders in wins. So I think Tampa Bay will win that series. But I do understand why people, you know, pause a little bit, because anybody who watched any of those meetings between the two knew that the Devils played well against them.
Kevin, for so many years, so much talk out of the East was Washington versus Pittsburgh, you know, Ovi versus Sid. But more so recently, a lot of that rivalry has shifted to the Penguins versus the Flyers, and some, myself included. I almost think that's more of an entertaining series just because of, you know, the spiciness and the physicality. And with Klocheru moving from center to the wing, do you expect maybe the Pims to rack up as high without that Crosby-Giroux ongoing, you know, the face-off battles and that? Or is this just going to be a penalty-filled series regardless?
Well, I don't actually think it'll be penalty-filled, because, you know, when we look back to that classic series, that was so long ago that there's only a handful of players remaining on both teams that were part of that. Now, some of the main combatants, you know, were Sidney Crosby and Letang and Evgeny Malkin, and they're still there. But, I think, you know, they're more mature and wiser, and I do think that both teams are going to, you know, mostly, and I'm going to put quotes around that, mostly, you know, play a hockey series here, because, you know, both of them are darn good hockey teams. Like, I think the Flyers, in my mind, were one of the biggest surprises. But I think everybody liked their young defensemen, and we knew that they had some potential offensively. But I don't know many people thought they were going to come together this quickly. And, you know, they did it without consistent goaltending, which is, you know, even more remarkable. Usually if you have a young defenseman, you kind of need that veteran goalie, that steady guy to kind of hold the fort down. And they really didn't have that. You know, and then, you know, Elliot is the guy they had turned to, and he got hurt, and they ended up with Peter Mrazek, of all people. And, you know, it just seems that it's the constant battle in Philadelphia to find the right goalie. And, you know, I think that's the advantage here, certainly for the Penguins, is that, you know, they've got a 23-year-old goalie with 2 Stanley Cups on his resume, and, you know, they've got Crosby and Malkin. So I think this should be a competitive series, because the rivalry is real, and I think the Flyers can raise their level, and I think the fans in Philadelphia will demand that. But I still think the Penguins are a better team, even though I think the Flyers' defense is quite impressive in terms of their ability to move the puck.
Kevin Allen is our guest on NHL This Week. We're looking at the Eastern Conference playoff matchups with Kevin. Of course, the Stanley Cup playoffs get underway tomorrow night here in Winnipeg with the Jets and the Minnesota Wild. Kevin, from my perspective, certainly one of the most interesting playoff series in the entire league, not just the Eastern Conference, is the Boston-Toronto matchup. You have two teams here that were two of the elite teams in the league. I mean, the fact they're playing in the first round is a shame, I would suggest. They're both terrific five-on-five teams, and they're both terrific power play teams, and they both have top seven penalty killing units as well. Is that series really maybe come down to goaltending, where for the Leafs to succeed, Freddie Anderson has to either equal or better the performance of Tuukka Rask?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I really like this series, quite a bit. You look at that Boston team, and I think at the start of the year, everybody viewed the Bruins as a hot team. And then, after maybe 10 or 12 weeks, everybody, changed and said, okay, this is not a hot team. This is a good team. Like, they've, really crossed over. And, you look at their defense, and they had the veteran guy in Chara, then the young star defenseman in Charlie McAvoy. McAvoy is exactly what Toronto needs, by the way. That's what they've been looking for, is a guy like McAvoy to come back and be the young guy to play with that young group of forwards they have. So, I got the Maple Leafs winning this series, and I'm more of a hunch than anything else, because I think this is really a toss-up series, and, your assessment of the goalies being important. I think the defense, that there's certainly an advantage for Boston, and as Zdeno Chara, back there who can be, other than a goalie, is there anyone in the league who can impact the series more than Zdeno Chara? And at 41, that's remarkable. But, he still has that long reach, and he covers half the ice, and he's a fierce competitor still. And at his age, like, he's worked so hard on his skating, and even a sort of a guy that was known as a big lumbering guy when he's young, he's actually more mobile as an older player, I think, than he was when he was younger. And he's really worked at it. And, he's very, very impressive. So, even though I picked the Maple Leafs to win it, when I look at it, the advantage I see here is maybe on defense, where, the Maple Leafs are still sort of lacking in that department, the level of consistency, the level of defensive coverage, where I think Boston's a little, more advanced in their defensive coverage there. So, it's going to be a great series. I think Toronto's depth up front they're pretty fun to watch. Like, you look at the top 11 forwards on Toronto, and they're very, very entertaining.
Kevin, Drew touched on this a little bit with saying, how it's a bit of a shame that the Leafs and the Bruins are going to play in the first round. And I thought you had a really interesting article last week up on usatoday.com talking about, reasons to be disappointed a week before the playoffs. And you mentioned, no Connor McDavid, no Ryan Suter, no Sedin Twins. But you mentioned the playoff format, the fact that we might see the Jets and the Predators, the two best teams in the league, in the second round. We might see Tampa Bay and Boston in the second round, Tampa Bay versus Toronto. Do you think that the NHL is going to look at this, or do you think this playoff format is here to stay?
No, I do think they're going to look at it. I sense there's a sentiment around the league and even in the league office that, they're not helping themselves by, with a format that essentially can always lead to a 1-2 playing each other, early in the playoffs. So I think everybody sort of gets it. The irony of all this is, and it's been forgotten now, but, the reason we're in this mess is, when we lost the season, the NHL surveyed season ticket holders around the league and did probably the most extensive survey they've ever done on fans' habits. And one of the things they concluded based on that was that fans really, really liked division setup. That's where they spent their money, is on division games. During surveys, they said they loved division rivalries and playoffs. So they went to that format and committed to that. But in practice and in reality, it hasn't worked. The fans have been disappointed. They want to see variety. And I think that for that reason, I think even though Gary Bettman said he's opposed to changing the format, meaning he doesn't want to add the rat tail games or the you know, the play-in games like we have in baseball. I think they're less committed to the idea that perhaps it might be time to sort of tweak it and go to a conference format. I'm not saying it'll happen this year or next year, but I think they're more open to it than anything else.
Kevin, I'm curious who you think has a better chance of carrying forward their amazing regular season into the postseason, Taylor Hall or Claude Giroux?
I'm going to go, you know, Claude Giroux because I think he has more to work with there. You know, that line with Couturier has and Voracek, you know, I guess they moved him off there. But, you know, there's just more talent there. Like Taylor Hall's had to do a lot of it by himself. Not that they don't have talent on the Devils, but, you know, it's young and it's inexperienced. And I think it's more polished in Philadelphia. So I would say he has the better chance. But Taylor Hall has had a remarkable season. And, you know, by the definition that we have to, we being the writer, members of the Writers Association, have to choose an MVP most valuable to his team, I just don't know how any writer could not have him on their ballot. Now, you know, I get it that, you know, some people are going to like Nathan MacKinnon and, you know, Connor McDavid had an exceptional year. I did my ballot today, and I don't, you know, I've been covering the league 32 years. I don't remember a tougher ballot to fill out than this year in all the races. Like the Norris was hard. The Hart was hard. You know, usually, you know, there are four or five guys that distinguish themselves. There was at least 10 guys and maybe more who deserve consideration for the MVP.
Kevin, we'll let you go on this last question. You know, we had you on back in October when the season began, and we asked you your Stanley Cup prediction. As we sit here now on the eve of the Stanley Cup playoffs beginning, who do you have coming out of the East, and who do you have coming out of the West?
Well, I've got the Nashville Predators winning it all, and so obviously I have them coming out of the West now. They've just been so dominant, you know, down the stretch, and they really kind of set themselves up. You know, the best goalie, I think, in the league this year in Rena. And Pekka Rinne, and they, you know, their defensive group, I think, is the best, and they're seventh in scoring. And in the East, I'm less convinced of this. I think it could be two or three teams, but I've gone with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and I sort of gave you the reason before when I said I just think that it's kind of their time, and they've learned a lot in you know, not getting as far as they would like in the previous years. And if you look at their talent, even though they didn't perform well in the second half, they've got it all. They got everything they need to get to the final, and I think it'll come together.
Well, considering in our hockey draft last night, I took 11 out of my 12 players from the Lightning and the Predators, I wholeheartedly agree with your predictions there, Kevin. Kevin Allen from USA Today joins us to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs. Kevin, always appreciate your time. Thanks very much for joining us.
Always enjoy being on your show.
Take care, Kevin.
Enjoy
Thanks
the first
again.
Round, Kevin.
When we come back, we shift our focus back to the Western Conference. We have the Pacific Division matchups to deal with. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our playoff preview show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Just the environment that would probably be in Vegas. They've been loud for 41 playoff or regular season games. Now they get their first taste of playoffs. Probably a lot of excitement in that city, and we have to be prepared to go in there and deal with the atmosphere.
Dustin Brown of the Los Angeles Kings ahead of the Golden Knights LA Kings playoff series that gets underway tomorrow night as well. The Cinderella season of the Las Vegas Golden Knights continues with a home playoff date after finishing in the top spot in the Pacific Division. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Golden Knights, LA Kings. To me, this is a good matchup for the Golden Knights. I mean, up until the last game of the season, it seemed like they might get the Anaheim Ducks. You know, the San Jose Sharks conceivably could have fallen all the way to that first wild card spot. But the way the Golden Knights, the speed the Golden Knights bring to the table, I think will give a fair bit of trouble to an LA Kings team that is certainly not the fastest in the NHL.
Right, I would agree with that. And you can look no further than Dion Phaneuf, who the Kings acquired prior to the trade deadline. You know, not the speediest defenseman, but he definitely provided the Kings with more offense from the back end. But, you know, when I look at the series, guys, it's easy to pick the LA Kings. They've won a couple of Stanley Cups here in the last 6 years, but the Vegas Golden Knights just kept surprising us. We thought kind of early on in the season, okay, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights are first in the Pacific, but eventually they're going to go on a losing streak. But they stayed in first in the Pacific Division the entire year, and that top line of Jonathan Marchessault, William Karlsson, and Riley Smith was excellent. Mm-hmm. You could put that top line against really any top line in the league. I'm not saying it's the best top line in the league, Drew, but all three of those players
they made magic this year together.
Especially William Karlsson,
sure.
Right? I mean, mm-hmm. he scores 40, what did he end up with, 41, 42 goals. Nobody expected him to score 30 goals this year, let alone 40 goals. And, you know, they got contributions from, you know, some cast-offs like Eric Halla and Alex Tuck, a former first-round pick. And Marc-Andre Fleury, even though he was injured early on in the season, he was excellent after he came back. So I would say that the Vegas Golden Knights are only a favorite right now because of where they finished in the standings. And I realize, you know, that might sound obvious, but I think this Los Angeles Kings team, their superstar power, as the analytics guys like to say. I mean, Anze Kopitar is the best center in this series. Drew Doughty is the best defenseman in this series. I think Jonathan Quick is, I would give him the slight advantage over Marc-Andre Fleury. And when you consider, guys, the biggest trade deadline acquisition that the Kings got was Jeff Carter. Jeff Carter has been phenomenal in a limited amount of games. We know Jeff Carter is one of the best snipers
he was
in
out,
the league.
He got injured so early in the season, came back right around the trade deadline is what you're saying.
Right, and now Jeff Carter, you know, takes off some of the pressure you know, that guys like Tyler Toffoli and Tanner Pearson and Adrian Kempe were feeling. Let's be honest here. The Kings don't have the best offensive team. Anze Kopitar is having a Hart Trophy worthy season.
Mm-hmm. He'd be on my ballot.
I think I would probably put him as one of the finalists as well, Drew. But when you talk about, you know, the differences between these two teams, they didn't play that great down the stretch. And if you're looking for advantages, I mean, I think this series is a toss-up. And I think a lot of people are picking the Golden Knights, again, just because of, you know, their 50-win season here. But, I mean, I actually like the Kings in this series. And I agree with you. I mean, the Kings aren't the fastest team. But I think they have just enough offense, and they're going to get the goaltending from Jonathan Quick. And I think this is going to be a long series. But I like the Kings.
Okay, we'll get your specific prediction at the end of the segment. But, Sean, from my perspective, the biggest drawback on the Golden Knights is probably their defense. Mm-hmm. In that, I mean, they don't have that number one horse that a lot of the teams need and a lot of people say you need in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But, you know, the six that they have on their back end, they probably match up decently against an LA Kings team that, you know, doesn't really roll three or four lines deep offensively at you. You know, after the Kings' top line of, you know, with Kopitar and Brown, and we know Jeff Carter, you know, has been injured for much of the year, you know, their third and fourth lines, you're not going to get a ton of offense from the LA Kings, so I don't think they can really exploit very many matchups against the Golden Knights' defense.
It's going to be a really fun series to watch. I mean, it's one of the speediest, quickest teams. We saw it here in Winnipeg when the Jets played the Golden Knights. They're fast. They're intense. Their forecheck is pressure-filled. And they're hounds on the puck. They're hound dogs. They chase it down. You're looking at a LA Kings team. It's a bit slower.
Mm-hmm.
A bit more of a defensive-style game. I mean, you spoke about William Karlsson, Ezzy. It's going to be really interesting to see if that success translates into the postseason. It's a whole new game, and it's going to be really interesting. But when you're just looking from a back-end perspective, yeah, I don't think the depth is there. But I think the lack of depth maybe on the LA Kings as a forward unit maybe offsets that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And if Anze Kopitar and Jeff Carter maybe go on a bit of a drought,
Well, I mean, if the Kings were if the Golden Knights were matched up against the Anaheim Ducks, for example, a team that rolls three good offensive lines at you, then which might happen in the second round, then the fact that their back end is a little weak might cause them to have some trouble. I don't know if LA can exploit that because, you know, a third line of Kyle Clifford, Trevor Lewis, and Adrian Kempe, it isn't really scaring anybody, and it's not scaring the Golden Knights, you know, to put out their John Merrill and Colin Miller third pairing defense against that third and fourth line of the LA Kings. From the Kings' perspective, the Golden Knights, you know, are offensively inclined. They've been one of the great goal scoring teams this year. I mean, you're going to hopefully get Jake Muzzin back in the lineup for the Kings, if not in game one, then game two. But what shape is he going to be in? How healthy is he going to be in? I mean, you can't have Drew Doughty on the ice for 45 minutes a game, as much as, you know, he might want to play that much. At some point in time, it'll become too much for him.
Yeah, but he can be out there for, you know, 27 or 28 minutes, and, you know, Jake Muzzin will be back in this series, and, you know, Alec Martinez is a great defenseman. I think Christian Folan has had an underrated year. I mean, this Kings team, Drew, was second in the league in goals against, third in the league in save percentage. I mean, the Kings are much better defensively than the Golden Knights are. So I see what you're saying. I mean, it's going to be maybe harder.
It's offense against defense.
Yeah.
Right. And from both sides, right?
Yes.
So when you're talking about, you know, the Kings' third and fourth lines, you know, Adrian Kempe's had a bit of an inconsistent year, but he's a rookie. And you're right. I mean, when you look at, you know, some of the players they have on their fourth lines, I mean, fourth and third lines, and you got Tanner Pearson there on the third line. You're used to seeing him on the second line there. But really, I think, you know, what it's going to come down to, I should also mention, too, Vegas was a 500 hockey team the last quarter of the season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not like Vegas is coming into the playoffs hot,
nope,
like the Winnipeg Jets or the Nashville Predators here. I mean, they were a pretty average team down the stretch, and most of those wins, as you know, Drew, came at home. So if you're the Kings, you're absolutely trying to keep these first couple of games low scoring, take that loud Vegas crowd out of it, and that's, for me, what the advantage is in this series. Yes, they'll miss Jake Muzzin. I think, you know, Dion Phaneuf has done a great job there in that Kings top four. And that's really, to me, what is going to be the key in this series. And, you know, if Andrei Kopitar is able to continue his play from the regular season into the playoffs, I mean, I think that's going to be a huge advantage. And Jeff Carter, as we talked about, I mean, when he came back into the lineup, this was a completely different Kings team. Tyler Toffoli has played better down the stretch. So I'm not saying that the Kings are going to sweep the Golden Knights. I think it's going to be a long series, but I do think the Kings are going to prevail.
How significant do you think the impact of Marc-Andre Fleury and his playoff experience will be for this Golden Knights team?
What about Jonathan Quick's playoff experience, right? He's got two cups.
I mean, absolutely. But the LA Kings, you know, when you have Doughty and Kopitar and Quick, you know who your leadership core is. Marc-Andre Fleury, if you look at up and down the Golden Knights lineup, they have some playoff experience, but none of those guys have been key contributors to a Stanley Cup winning team like Marc-Andre Fleury has been for the Pittsburgh Penguins the last couple of years, and then back when they won their first cup. So I think Marc-Andre Fleury, it will just be sort of a voice of reason and a voice of calm in a dressing room that might get a little hyped up ahead of their first playoff game at home.
Absolutely, and I mean, I don't think the Vegas Golden Knights win the division without Marc-Andre Fleury. Let's be honest here, Drew. Early on in the season, when they had, you know, Malcolm Subban and they had Max Lagacy and, you know, one of the five goaltenders they had in the lineup early on, I mean, that's one thing to do that for 15 or 20 games. But over an 82-game season, I don't think they finish first in the Pacific Division without Marc-Andre Fleury's excellent goaltending. So absolutely, in the playoffs, his leadership and experience is going to factor in big time. And, you know, the Golden Knights might very well win this series. But I just look at the way the Kings have been playing as of late. And, you know, the Kings had to scratch and claw their way into the playoffs, as opposed to the Golden Knights, who just kind of coasted their way the last 4 or 5 weeks of the season there in first. They had a big lead over you know, the Ducks and the Sharks for a long period there. So, you know, we'll see what happens here, but I disagree. I don't think this is a great first round matchup for them.
That's fair enough. You've mentioned you're going to take the Kings. How many games? What do you have?
I'll take the Kings in six.
You have the Kings in six. Sean Assar, what's your prediction on this series?
First of all, I'm actually just really quick, really interested to see how the Golden Knights respond to the pressure of playing at home in the playoffs. All indications coming out of Vegas is that it's going to be a crazy party and the atmosphere is going to be off the chains and all, and it's going to be really interesting to see how the team carries forward. I was having a lot of trouble figuring out who I think will come out of this series. Get the Pepto because I think it's the Kings in seven.
And, Sean, by the way, both of the Pacific Division matchups are really close. Ducks and Sharks, I mean, does anybody think that series isn't going six or seven games?
How about we finish with – we're going to do Ducks and Sharks coming up after the break. Let's finish this series. I hate to disagree with you two fine scholarly gentlemen, but I think this is a good matchup for the Golden Knights. I think they use their speed. I think it's too much for the Kings to overcome. I have the Golden Knights Cinderella season continuing for another round. Golden Knights in six.
I think it's kind of funny. I saw the – Golden Knights and the Kings back in early January with Naomi on our honeymoon.
Yeah,
the Golden Knights ended up winning that game in overtime. I think it's kind of funny that they're meeting in the first round. It was a great game. And
well, it's time for you guys to go on a second honeymoon. You know,
I'd love
to. Yeah, I know. So there you have it. We have two votes for the Kings and yours truly voting for the Golden Knights. When we return, one more Western Conference playoff series. That's going to be the Sharks and the Ducks. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our playoff preview show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Focus on putting those 2 points up every single night. You know, that's what we can control. We couldn't, you know, obviously there's a lot of things that were out of our hand. But we just felt if we took care of our business and what we had to do, you know, we knew we had an opportunity to move up. And, you know, obviously worked out in our favor getting, you know, last few wins and moving up, getting home ice for the first round.
Anaheim Ducks center Adam Henrique ahead of their first-round playoff matchup against the San Jose Sharks. Somehow, some way, the Ducks ended up with home ice advantage in that series after it looked like the Sharks were going to be home and cool, the second spot in the Pacific Division. All of a sudden, they have to start on the road going south to Anaheim before the series shifts back to the Bay Area San Jose. Welcome back to NHL This Week, this segment of the show brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy, always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. One of the more fascinating series is this one between the Ducks and the Sharks. I was sitting back, you know, doing the prep for the show, and I mean, for 5 minutes, I'm like, okay, it's a Ducks series. Then for the next 5 minutes, okay, it's the Sharks series. This one really, truly is the proverbial toss-up. And, you know, these two teams are just so evenly matched. It really is a very interesting series between these two Pacific Division rivals.
Andrew, you mentioned that it's a surprise that with the way the Ducks were playing early on in the season that they ended up finishing second in the Pacific Division with 101 points. But guys, if Ryan Getzlaff and Ryan Kesler are healthy, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, this is a 110, 112-point team, and they're probably competing with the Jets and the Predators for the President's Trophy. And, you know, Getzlaff ends up playing, you know, 55, 56 games, and Kesler plays half of the year. And looks like John Gibson is going to be healthy, we think, for Game 1. He was practicing earlier this week, so John Gibson should play. Ryan Miller was obviously ready to go, but, you know, the San Jose Sharks team, I mean, let's, you know, get it out there right away. I mean, they're going to miss Joe Thornton. We're not sure if he's going to play at all in this series. He's missed, what, 40 games this year. And, you know, that's your captain and your number one center. And you know, I realize, you know, Joe Pavelski is your number one sniper. But, I mean, Joe Thornton, you know, a couple years ago when they go to the Stanley Cup final against the Pittsburgh Penguins, I mean, if you don't have Joe Thornton, I don't think you go that far.
He's not the best player on the team anymore, but he's certainly a heart and soul of the team. And they will miss him in the lineup. It's a key loss because he just adds such a playmaking dimension to the Sharks lineup that's now missing.
Right, Shawnee, and you've still got, you know, Joe Pavelski, Logan Couture up the middle, Chris Tierney has been centering that third line with Kevin LeBanc and Timo Meier. But when you're able to have, you know, Joe Thornton up the middle, I mean, we know he's one of the best playmakers in the game. And sure, he's in his late 30s, but, you know, not having Jumbo Joe in the lineup, I think, is going to severely limit them. But, I mean, adding Evander Kane prior to the trade deadline has really helped. He's been nearly a point-a-game player, and, you know, they've still got Brent Burns producing big time on the back end. Mark Edward Vlasic, you know, still a great top four defenseman for them. I think their defense is really solid. They've actually been not as consistent defensively this year. Their goal scoring's actually been up this year. And when you look at the Anaheim Ducks, I mean, you mentioned Adam Henrique and, you know, they're so solid up the middle with Getzlaff, Kessler, and Henrique, and then you've got Antoine Vermette there, able to play that fourth-line center role. And
Derek Grant, Antoine Vermette sort of swapping in and out as to who the centerman is on that fourth line.
Right, and as far as I'm concerned, the Ducks' top line is right up there with, you know, the best in the business with Ricard Raquel, Getzlaff, of course, and Corey Perry back there on the top line after he was kind of demoted to the third and fourth lines last year. And this Ducks team, guys, is battle-tested. I mean, year after year, this Ducks team is a top team in the Pacific Division. We've seen them go far. They obviously haven't gone all the way and won a Stanley Cup since 2007. But I think that, as you said, Drew, this is going to be an absolute war, this series. I really don't see the series not going six or seven games. And you almost want to flip a coin here, because when you match up, you know, the forwards and the defense. And we should also mention Cam Fowler not being in the lineup.
Well, that's what I was going to say.
I still think they can overcome Cam Fowler's injury, because Hampus Lindholm and Josh Manson, that's a great top pair. You've got Francois Beauchemin and Brandon Montour on your second pair. So, I mean, I think they're good enough, but as far as, you know, whether or not this team is going to be able to go far into the Western Conference Final and beyond, I'm not sure about that. I mean, Cam Fowler will be back by the second round.
Their defense looks a lot better with Cam Fowler and even to some extent Kevin Bieksa in it, because he's also out of the lineup. Then
Fowler. I mean, Bieksa. He's a six or seven defenseman.
Right. Bieksa's certainly a veteran at the
playoff tested
certainly at the tail end of his career. I'd be much more comfortable with Fowler and Bieksa in my lineup rather than Marcus Pedersen and Andy Walensky.
Right.
Those are rookies, and that's where it gives me pause on the Anaheim Ducks. Is, you know, can their bottom pairing defense and Francois Beauchemin, who's, I mean, certainly this is his final season, I believe he's retiring at season's end, can they hold up over the rigors of a seven-game series against the San Jose Sharks team? I mean, Evander Kane, for all his warts, certainly provides an offensive boost to that San Jose Sharks team, and he's been quite good since coming over from Buffalo at the trade deadline.
And it's funny you bring up Evander Kane, because you want to talk about a guy who's been itching to get into the NHL postseason. The guy has not played a single NHL playoff game entering this year. So this is a guy who is going to want to get out there and play the most meaningful hockey you can play in an NHL season. You think that, like, Evander Kane, for all his, what's the word, warts you used, Drew?
Yeah.
He's a big power forward whose game is perfect for the postseason. He likes to hit, he's physical, he's fast, and he's got the offensive touch. He's got a little bit of grit to him and a little bit of sandpaper as well, but I think it's going to be paramount that we were just discussing the injuries on the Ducks' blue line for the San Jose Sharks to be able to hem the puck in. Possession will be key for the Sharks to kind of wear down the Ducks' defense core. And then you talk about a guy who's really hit his stride in the second half of the season, Brett Burns, a guy who's been funneling pucks towards the net constantly. It's going to be a real, real busy series, I think, in the Anaheim zone. Luckily, they've got some of the deepest centers in the postseason right now. So,
well, that's what I was going to ask you. How does the Sharks' defense? You know, you mentioned Brent Burns. I mean, we didn't even mention yet Mark Edward Vlasic, who's probably one of the...
I did mention him.
Did you? Pardon me. You did mention. I don't listen to you usually, but, you know, he's either the best or one of the best defensive defensemen in the league itself.
Yeah, I agree with that.
How much does, you know, Vlasic and Braun and Martin and Burns sort of matching up against the Ducks' three scoring lines? That's the most intriguing matchup. I think it's whoever wins that battle probably determines who wins the series.
Yeah, and it's interesting, Drew, because Paul Martin, not the Prime Minister, the defenseman, is back with Brent Burns, but Paul Martin did not spend most of the year in the National Hockey League.
No, he was in the AHL after he was injured to start the season.
Right, and, you know, to me, that's a big question mark. And, you know, you mentioned Mark Edward Vlasic. I mean, Vlasic and Justin Braun, I mean, that's your shutdown pair. And Brent Burns, we know, is still one of the best offensive defensemen in the league. His numbers aren't as good as they were last year, but he definitely picked it up after struggling in the first, you know, 20 or so games of the season, Drew. But for me, you mentioned, you know, the top three lines of each team. And we know that the Getzlaff line and the Pavelski line are going to produce. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Evander Kane. We spoke about Kane. He's been really good since coming over for Buffalo. But I think that's what it's going to come down to. And I think we're going to see some overtime games in the series, and it's going to come down to depth scoring. And is the Adam Henrique line, with Nick Ritchie and Andre Kasha, are they going to be able to produce if that second line of Kessler, Silverberg, and Cogliano is not producing? Same thing goes for the San Jose Sharks. Is that second line of Couture, Thomas Hertl, Mikhail Bodker going to produce? What are they going to get from guys like Chris Tierney and Timo Meier? Mm-hmm. I think you know, there are a lot of similarities between these two teams. Maybe you give the slight advantage to the Ducks in net, and Martin Jones, you know, hasn't proven it at the starter position. I mean, he's been the backup for Jonathan Quick, but he's never, aside from the Stanley Cup run from a couple of years ago, as of late, he hasn't done it. So I think you're talking about, you know, two very even teams. I personally like the Ducks, but I'm going to take the Ducks in seven. I don't think it's going to be easy. I wouldn't be surprised if the Sharks win this series.
So Ezzy has the Ducks in seven. Sean Asor, your prediction on this series?
I once again will repeat Ducks in seven.
Have you not learned anything over the years?
No, I'm a slow learner.
Okay, very well. We'll talk about it off air then. You have Ducks in seven as well. You know, something about, for some reason, I like the San Jose Sharks in this series. I think that that they might be just sort of flying a little bit under the radar. I'm going to go with the Sharks in seven, which I think goes to show you the fact that we have 3 7-game series mm-hmm. being predicted here, just how close this series will likely be. When we come back, why don't we play the Eric DeHatchick audio? I had an opportunity earlier today to sit down with Eric DeHatchick of TheAthletic.com to talk about the Western Conference playoffs. So we'll play that audio and then much more on the Eastern Conference playoff matchups. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our playoff preview show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our playoff preview show. We're pleased to be joined on the line now by Eric DeHatchick of TheAthletic.com. Eric, always appreciate you joining us for the playoff preview show. How are you?
I'm very good, very good. An unbelievably interesting playoff this year because, especially in the East, which I know is somebody else's purview, but I hate the matchups in the East. You know, we have to make, where I'm working at The Athletic, they want us to make predictions. I hate making predictions. I always say, if I could tell you, and go 8-0 in the first round, I wouldn't be talking to you. I would be sitting in a sports book in Vegas and putting my feet up. So the matchups are crazy there. I think the West is a little bit more of a traditional favorite versus underdog in each of the series. Although, you know, in the Pacific, I'm picking the two lower seeded teams. In fact, I think overall I picked 5 technical underdogs, in other words, teams that had fewer points, and only 3 favorites. And the 3 favorites that I picked, I'm lukewarm on a couple of the picks. And the only thing that I really feel comfortable and confident in is Nashville over Colorado. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens when the smoke clears after the first round, or even after the second round, and our final four is something like Toronto, Columbus, Los Angeles, Nashville, you know, which I think could happen, you know. So anyway,
it is definitely wide open here in the city. Of course, the expectations are high for the Winnipeg Jets. They open tomorrow night against the Minnesota Wild. You know, from my perspective, the loss of Ryan Suter and Jared Spurgeon's uncertainty with his health seems like the defense for the Wild just might be too vulnerable to the 3 or 4 line wave that the Jets throw at their opponents.
Sure, and that's, you know, that's the rational, natural assumption. I mean, you have to focus on when you lose a, you know, 25 minute per game night, the guy, you miss what Suter gives you on the ice. And then there's a certain gravitas that he brings to the dressing room. Like, he's just an important part of their leadership group. So you're losing on so much on so many levels when you take him out of the lineup. And, you know, frankly, I don't think very many people, even the hardcore, know, you know, who the Soucy and Sealer, two of the 6 guys that are going to play regularly for Minnesota are. But I do think that Bruce Boudreau has enough confidence. Like, Matt Dumba's had a very good year. He's been on my fantasy team all year, and so I've watched him very closely, and he's not the high risk guy that he used to be. I think he just got flat out better this year, and Brodin has missed time with an injury, but the two of them together have tremendous chemistry, and I do think that Spurgeon will be back, and he's a very effective player for them. Really, Boudreau's one of his favorites on that team. So I'm not sure that they can't overcome that the loss of Suter on a short-term basis. I've seen enough hockey over the years to know that, today we are talking about a 2-month run. And I think that not having a guy like Suter in the lineup hurts you over 2 months, especially because you can't forecast where you might get other injuries. Like if this, you know, if they somehow find a way of upsetting Winnipeg, but run into the same injuries that say Nashville did last year, and you know, eventually they're going to run out of bodies. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, you know, a best of seven starting right now, and they only have to overcome one guy, and they're only worried about overcoming him one game at a time. So, I mean, I'm not trying to sit on the fence there, but I want to articulate the other point of view, or the point of view that if you're Minnesota internally, it's like, hey, you know, he's an important guy on our team. But I mean, you know, look at how Winnipeg played without Scheifele. I mean, Scheifele was an important guy on that team, but they found a way because of their depth and people slotting into other roles of overcoming his loss, and especially early on. So it's going to be interesting. I mean, you know, I've said this to you before. I think Winnipeg has the best right side defense in the league. There's just flat out no team that can come at you with the depth that they've got there. And so on paper, that's a huge edge. And you know, Winnipeg, you know, has, you know, four lines that can come at you hard. But Minnesota has three. You know, they last year, I would say they were the deepest team in the NHL up front. And even though, you know, they made that move for Hanzel and that didn't work out and he moved on, they're still pretty good. I mean, they're, you know, Charlie Coyle is playing on the third line right now, so that's not bad if you have that kind of depth up front.
How do you think the Jets will handle the weight of expectations? Because this is a team that certainly has never won a playoff game. The franchise, you know, going back to Atlanta, has never won a playoff game. And now, you know, people are pegging them as a heavy favorite in this round and a team that can give the Predators, you know, if it ends up being the Predators, a good run in the second round.
I mean, that is a great question. And I think that is, you know, the card that Bruce Boudreau, the Minnesota coach, is playing is that exactly. And I've known Bruce for a long time and dealt with him a lot during the years that he was coaching in Anaheim and even before that in Washington. And he has almost always had the best team. And, you know, you could just see year after year after year his face getting redder and redder and redder because of the weight of those expectations. That absolutely weighs heavily on a team. You know, your mindset all year is we've got something to prove, we've got something to prove, we've got something to prove. We'll show them, you know, we're the Winnipeg Jets. And I think that, you know, like, you know, remember me, I was the guy that said they were going to have a breakthrough year this year. So I've been on the bandwagon since the start. But a lot of people joined the bandwagon as the course of the season unfolded. Now we're at the point where it's like, you know, everybody's on that bandwagon. And when you are that team, you feel the heat. You know, what was it Blake Wheeler said a couple of weeks ago? Hey, we haven't won anything yet. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. So they understand internally that there's work ahead. But in terms of what Boudreau's trying to do, you know, last year they made, you know, trade deadline moves. We're all in. We're going for it. They felt that, and it affected their performance. And I do believe that he likes the idea of everybody, you know, loving Winnipeg and nobody, you know, loving them. And he'll play that card to his players. And you know, how that manifests itself on the ice is another matter. The one thing that I've had limited dealings with Connor Hellebuyck over the year, really just, you know, in scrums. So I don't pretend to have any kind of knowledge of his personality. But what I have observed in those limited dealings is he's a very confident guy. And I think that really helps. You know, he has had a great year. Another guy, by the way, that played on my fantasy team. And
did you win?
I did win. Oh, yeah. and we can talk about that later. But I think how he plays and performs in that first home game with that whiteout and all that noise and all that feeling and all that adrenaline and all that energy, and you know, then they drop the puck and now we're playing hockey. If he holds up, I think they'll win, and that's why I picked Winnipeg. And I do think too that the one thing that the Jets have the ability to do is win some of those 6-5 games. I mean, you made a reference to a second round series against Nashville. Just about everybody I know in the National Hockey League, when we're talking back and forth, everybody wants to see that. You know, the second round is often that letdown round. You know, like the first round, everybody's excited. You know, where are the upsets, this and that. And then you're in the second round, and now it's down to business. And often those tend to be more plodding rounds, and you know, injuries have started to happen, and people are starting to lose a little bit of that edge, and now it's becoming a grind. And I think that what people who are, you know, sort of forecasting, you know, what might happen, it's like, you know, that could be the salvation of the second round, a Nashville-Winnipeg series, because they, you know, the last two games they played were just so much fun. And I think a lot of people that are kind of neutral in all this really want to see that happen.
Eric DeHatchick is our guest on NHL This Week. We're doing our playoff preview show. Eric DeHatchick, of course, is with TheAthletic.com. Eric, we're sort of skipping ahead of the series between the Predators and the Avalanche, but, I mean, most prognosticators just don't see a way that the Avalanche can match up to the Predators both offensively and defensively, and then never mind the fact you got Semyon Varlamov out of the lineup and Jonathan Bernier. Well, he's had a decent season. It's, you know, it was only last year, Game 7 in that Western Conference final against the Predators that he played for the Ducks, and he certainly couldn't get the job done for Anaheim that night.
Yeah, that's right. Well, it would have to be an epic upset. You know, the league is so close this isn't like it was, you know, some years where, you know, like in a 21-team NHL, a team could come in and be the 16th seed with a 69 points and a less than 500 record. And once in a great while, you know, a Minnesota in 92 would upset a Chicago. I think it was 92, 91 or 92. Yeah. And where the gap was, you know, 30 or 40 points. I mean, the year the Flames won the Stanley Cup, you know, they had 117 or 119 points and Vancouver had 73. And it took overtime in the seventh game for the Calgary to escape that first round. So the history of the NHL demonstrates that a handful of times one of those, you know, teams that nobody likes, you know, somehow takes out a cup favorite in the first round. It has happened. It can happen. But the odds are that it won't happen. And for a lot of the reasons that you said, I mean, they are such a top heavy team relying on that, first line. And when the line cooled off, they struggled a bit. And I think some of those younger players like Tyson Jost is a better player today than he was at the start of the season. Alex Kerfoot now has, a year under his belt and looks like he's going to be a player down the road and, you know, Compher they like. So there are names that people don't have a lot of familiarity with that I think in a year or two are going to be, you know, better players, and that team will get better and it will get deeper and they will, you know, they will hopefully build on the season that they had here. But, you know, we were talking earlier about Ryan Suter being out of the lineup. Well, Eric Johnson is their Ryan Suter. You know, maybe not as accomplished, but another guy that burns those 25 important minutes a night. He's just really critical to what they do, and he's not there. He wasn't the last time I checked. So, I just don't see how they can do it. You know, I mean, you know, nothing is absolutely impossible, but that's the only series that I felt could really end in fewer than six games. I picked Nashville in five. I think sometimes the hardest thing to do is to be the team that goes to the Stanley Cup final and then loses. You know, people often talk about a Stanley Cup hangover, and they only apply it to the team that wins the Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you've expended all this energy and you exhale and you party all summer with the cup and you're not ready to play in September. I've always thought it was harder on the team that comes so close and loses. You've seen in the history of the NHL where a lot of times that team that gets to the final, some years the next year doesn't even make the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Because it, you know, you put so much into it and come up this much short is so depressing and so difficult to deal with. And what Nashville did this year, you know, they went in as a 16th seed last year and they came back motivated and you know, internally the discussion was, you know, we were really close and we have this solid foundation, and what are the steps that we need to take to build on this solid foundation so that now that we're in this window and we have, you know, Pekka in goal, we can go and get it over the top. And I give them a ton of credit because that, as I said, that is a very difficult thing to do, to come back after a disappointing finish last year and build on it and have the kind of regular season they had where they won the President's Trophy. And, you know, they didn't really have one superstar scorer. Like, you look at Winnipeg, I mean, you know, Wheeler had this unbelievable year, and, you know, Scheifele was having that unbelievable year until he got hurt, and Linus scored all those goals, and Ehlers looks like Pavel Bure. I mean, they, you know, they have exciting players, and, you know, once you get past Philip Forsberg on Nashville, you know, I mean, Arvidsson's a good player, and Johansson's a good player, and Tourist is a good player, and Fiala's coming, but they don't have, I mean, they rely on four lines, you know, four unbelievable defensemen and a goalie that's rock solid. So, I think they win that round in five, and then we'll see. You know, if Winnipeg gets through, I picked Winnipeg in seven, because I think, like, I'm like everybody else, I want to see that second round match. And then to me it becomes a coin flip, because those two teams, Winnipeg and Nashville, are so evenly matched in terms of just flat out good players. You know, they both teams just don't have a lot of weak links. You're not carrying guys in at the bottom of the lineup that, you know, you hope and pray and you put out there in fourth line situations for the first two periods, and then you shorten your bench and you hope you don't have a triple overtime. You know, the Winnipeg and Nashville both are capable of surviving those kinds of peaks and valleys that you have in the playoffs far better than Minnesota and Colorado.
Eric DeHatchick is our guest on NHL This Week. We're talking about the NHL playoffs, which gets underway tomorrow. Of course, Eric, you're going to be in California covering the Ducks and the Sharks. It's really a tremendous first-round playoff matchup. You look at the Ducks' forward depth going up against the back end of the San Jose Sharks. How important is the matchup there? Mark-Edward Vlasic, it seems like he's going to have to be on the ice, you know, 25, 30 minutes it's a game to be able to hold off the three lines of the Anaheim Ducks.
Well, that is an interesting matchup, because I know internally in Anaheim, right up until the last 10 games, they were not happy with how things were coming together. They understood that at the start of the season, because Hampus Lindholm was coming off off-season surgery, that Sammy Vatanen was coming off off-season surgery, and that Kessler was going to miss the first half, that they needed to just hang in there. And it would probably be enough, you know, to go through win one, lose one, you know, win two, lose one, and just stay in the race. And then I think what they hoped was that as those players drifted back into the lineup, they would have a surge and get going. And they really didn't. You know, they were in a holding pattern for most of the year, and they've made that trade where they brought in Henrique to add some depth, and but they finally did get it going around game 70. And even though they've lost Cam Fowler, I mean, you know, isn't that the theme of the Western Conference, that the number one defenseman not available at the start of the series? You know, I think that is going to be kind of the X factor in the series. That on the one hand, as you say, you've got Vlasic, who, you know, if there was a defensive defenseman of the year award in the NHL, would probably win it this year. Just, you know, so quietly efficient, and, you know, he's always, you know, top four on Team Canada at the Olympics for a reason. And he has the ability to play a lot of minutes and play them very effectively. And even if he doesn't show up on the scoreboard that much, although he had a pretty good year, I think he had like 32 points, he's absolutely critical. Him and Braun, as the shutdown pair, have demonstrated to me that they can just play, and they move the puck really well, and they do take good players away, and I think Anaheim, the fact that, you know, that they brought in Henrique was a win now kind of a move. They've kind of left themselves a little bit vulnerable on defense. I mean, when people have talked about Anaheim's defense in the past, they've compared it favorably to Nashville's. If you look at the six guys that have to play in this series versus, say, the six guys that are playing in Nashville, there is a big night and day difference. So that'll be interesting to see how they can overcome that. But you know, Henrique and Kasha getting a year under his belt and showing that he can be a game breaker. You know, you're in a close game and all of a sudden you get a 5-on-5 goal from the third line because Kasha makes a great play based on a nice pass from Henrique. That to me is the one part of what they did in Anaheim this year that flew maybe a little bit under the radar, because I just love the way Henrique plays the game. And the only problem that I see with Anaheim is that Kessler really doesn't look right to me, has not looked right all year. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know, you know, what that is, whether it's, you know, lots of miles on the chassis and just not, you know, being able to play at the level that he once played at, or just being undermined by, you know, that surgery, which was pretty serious. And so I think that line, which was the best 2A line in, or 3A, whatever you want to call it, in the NHL for a long time, just hasn't had that good a year. So I'll be very interesting to see how effective Cogniano, Kessler, and Silverberg can be. Because if they can raise their level over what we saw for most of the second half when they were together, I think that might give Anaheim a slight edge.
Eric DeHatchick, our guest on NHL This Week. We're previewing the Western Conference playoff matchups. Eric, one matchup to go. It's Cinderella there in Vegas, the Golden Knights against the Los Angeles Kings. You know, the Golden Knights have really been the darling of the NHL. They've certainly been the story of the NHL this year. Do you expect it to continue into the playoffs? It seems like they have a decent matchup against LA, given the offense that they can throw at it. I'm not sure if LA can match them offensively. They certainly can do it with Doughty and with Quick, though.
Yeah, well, to me, the speed is the big thing there. Like, I think the main reason that LA went and made a very under the radar move for Tobias Reeder out of Arizona was just because they're not fast, and and Vegas is. Vegas just plays so fast, and notwithstanding they finished the year in Calgary, and notwithstanding that they lost 7-1 in that last game, and they didn't have their full lineup there. So I've been in Vegas, I think, what, 3-4 times this year. But I saw them a lot at home. And saw them a few times on the road as well. And so, why they were successful, they roll four lines at you and they just push. And they trust the process, as, you know, I hate that cliche, but that's really what they do. That, you know, Gallant just lets them play. He is the, among, you know, coaches in the NHL right now, he's just one of those guys that the players love to play. They skate through the wall for him. And, so they push, they press, they force you to make mistakes. They score some 5-on-5 goals. And then, you know, if you end up having to take a restraining foul, they're pretty good on the power play. And they have, high-end skill than you think. You know, like, I kept waiting for Carlson to slow down. He just kept getting better and better. You know, Marchessault is so quick. You know, he seems to get behind the defense, you know, once or twice a game for a breakaway. And so, you know, they're an experienced team. No kids in that lineup, right? No 19-year-olds, no 20-year-olds. They're not, you know, trying to, you know, integrate their young people right now. They have, you know, guys who are in their prime, who have tremendous hockey sense, who can play the system, and who have earned the trust of the coach. So, you know, when you compare that, you know, to LA, completely different, you know, like 5 or 6 core pieces there that have won before. And Vegas had, I don't think, matches them anywhere except in goal. We can talk about that in a minute. But I think the difference is that Vegas is better in the bottom 6 of their forward roster and maybe, you know, the bottom 3 of their defense. So LA reminds me of a team that is very heavily reliant on Dowdy, Kopitar, Carter, and Dustin Brown, who's had this resurgent season, and it really does fall off after that. Foley hasn't had a great year. Pearson hasn't had a great year. But I think they feel that with Carter coming back, it takes some of the pressure off of Kopitar, and they like Kempe as a third-line guy, and they're playing Pearson there right now. So I think they are trying to put together a lineup that matches up against Vegas's in terms of what Vegas can do in terms of just running guys out there. I just think, I picked L.A., but if Vegas were to beat them, I would be surprised if it wasn't just because the LA defense, as it's currently constituted, with Muzzin probable for the game, but he's not going to be 100%. I just don't know if that collective group of 6 can handle Vegas' speed.
Eric, we'll let you go on the last cliche question, and you know exactly what it's going to be. Who comes out of the West? Who comes out of the East?
Well, I think I picked Nashville, Toronto, and again, I don't do it with any great conviction because, you know, Boston could easily beat Toronto in the first round. They probably will, but I just feel that this is one of those years. Like, I don't think anybody saw Ottawa being in the Final Four. I actually had Nashville as one of my dark horses last year, so I'm not going to say nobody saw Nashville coming because I think a few people did. But I think it'll be crazy and topsy-turvy again. And so, you know, I'm going to pick a quote favorite out of the West and a quote underdog out of the East. And, you know, I'm almost certain that I'm going to be wrong, but but you want two names, those are the names I'll give you, Nashville and Toronto.
We always appreciate those two names. We always appreciate your analysis. Eric the Hatchick is with TheAthletic.com. He's going to be in California, so be sure to read all his work as he covers the Ducks and the Sharks and then the Kings and the Golden Knights. Eric, thanks so much for doing this. It'll be a fun first round getting underway tomorrow.
All right. Thank you, guys.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
And them getting Brassard, third line center. He's not a third line center on any other team, so you know, they have all the pieces on paper. They're a really good team, and the playoffs they always find a way. So for us, it's we need to challenge them early on, and should be a fun series.
Claude Giroux of the Philadelphia Flyers talking about their upcoming series against the Pittsburgh Penguins. That series gets underway tomorrow night as well in Pittsburgh, the Battle of Pennsylvania. Welcome back to NHL This Week. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you're looking for a place to catch the game, Bernstein's Deli's got you covered. Big screen TVs everywhere, great food and drink specials. It's hashtag hockey night at Bernstein's. For more information, bernsteinsdeli.com. Of all the playoff series that isn't involving the Winnipeg Jets, of course, this one might be the one that I have the most interest in, the Flyers and the Penguins. It's been six long years since these two teams played. If you remember back to 2012 when they last played, it was an absolute bloodbath. Game after game filled with brawls and line brawls and players getting kicked out and Giroux and Crosby. Just a tremendous battle between these two in-state rivals. Ezzie, how do you see this series breaking out between the Flyers and the Penguins?
Yeah, the interstate series, and you know, Sean mentioned it during the first hour. Claude Giroux is playing on the wing with Sean Couturier and Michael Raffle right now on that top line, and you know, that's going to be a bit of a change. But you heard Claude Giroux say it right there. I mean, Derek Brassard, you know, he's going to be ready to go for game one, so Riley Shane's not going to have to start off as the third line center, but up the middle, guys, we know who gets the job done every year: Malkin, Crosby, and mm-hmm. Brassard just makes them even better after they lost Nick Bonino to the Nashville Predators. So Penguins dominate the season series, Sean. They basically score five goals every single game against the Flyers. And, you know, I don't think it's necessarily going to be the superstar talent that wins this series, because Giroux, Couturier, Voracek, you know, Wayne Simmonds, the Flyers have a lot of good players. For me, it's scoring depth. And, you know, Provorov and Gostisbehere are a good young top pair there. But after that, you know, Travis Sanheim, Andrew McDonald, I mean, they're just not as deep. So I'm taking the Penguins, but I don't think it's going to be a sweep. I think the Flyers make it interesting. So I'm going to take the Penguins in six.
Sean, how do you see this series breaking out? I mean, you look at the goaltending situation. Brian Elliott has been shaky this mm-hmm. year, but Matt Murray has been shaky as well. And this is the first playoff run where they don't even have the comfort of a quality backup in Marc-Andre Fleury like they have for the last few seasons.
Right, and if you remember, Marc-Andre Fleury was actually called into duty last year when Matt Murray got hurt. He had to play in those first two rounds, and we played quite remarkably for Pittsburgh during those first two rounds mm-hmm. and allowed Matt Murray to take the time necessary to heal.
You don't want to see Casey DeSmith in
no,
the net for the Penguins.
No, not. But yeah. I think Ezzie just nailed it. You talk about just depth and the overwhelming amount, and it just... my hat tips more so to Pittsburgh and the fact that you look at this lineup and it's up to 13 players that are on this roster from their previous two cup runs. So it's essentially the same group of guys going to war with each other once again against a relatively, I don't want to say inexperienced Flyers roster, but you mean you got Nolan Patrick, a rookie, as your second line center, and he's going to have a very, very tough task of either shutting down Evgeny Malkin, Sidney Crosby, mm-hmm. or a Derek Brassard. I just figure that the experience and the high-potent offense of the Pittsburgh Penguins has them winning in six.
So you have the Penguins in six. Ezzie, you have the Penguins in six. As long as the Penguins, as long as the Flyers don't take the Penguins out of their game and, mm-hmm. and get the Penguins suckered into a physical contest with all the extracurriculars and the jabs and the fist to the face and really turn it into a mucker's paradise. Mm-hmm. As long as that doesn't happen, I think the Penguins' talent wins out. I would say it's Penguins. I'm going to say seven, though, just because I think that they have the ability to get under the Penguins' skin, as we've seen, and I just think that this is going to be a tremendous first-round contest. We're going to go quickly because we don't have a ton of time left. The other Metropolitan Division matchup sees the Washington Capitals against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Mentioned when we had Kevin Allen on in the first hour, Philip Grubauer gets the start for the Capitals. Sergei Bobrovsky for the Columbus Blue Jackets in net. Bobrovsky has struggled in the playoffs. Can the Blue Jackets win this series if Bobrovsky isn't the Vezina candidate that he has been previously, especially during the regular season?
No, I think he has to be the better goaltender, Drew, and that goes for many series, but especially Bobrovsky, who you mentioned, you know, he has the Vezina Trophy. He's probably not going to be a finalist this year, but, you know, that must have been a tough decision, guys, for Barry Trotz to have to start Philip Grubauer over Braden Holtby, a guy that's been a Vezina Trophy finalist twice, right? Drew, you talked to Kevin Allen. We all talked to Kevin Allen, but you mentioned that to Kevin Allen. And, you know, I would give the advantage to the Blue Jackets when it comes to the goaltending. Braden Holtby, I mean, let's be honest, we're all surprised at his struggles this year, and nobody thought Grubauer would be the starting goalie for the Caps in the playoffs. And, you know, when you look at this Caps team, they've definitely flown under the radar. And, you know, a big move this year for Barry Trotz was breaking up Ovi and Backstrom, and that's given them, you know, more spread out scoring. And, you know, Backstrom, Burakovsky, and Oshie have done a great job here down the stretch, and the Capitals have been a pretty consistent team as opposed to the Blue Jackets, who started off really hot, struggled kind of December, January, February, and then started to come on in March and April. I mean, for me, this series is very close. I mean, you've probably got more high-end talent on the Washington Capitals, but that top line of Pierre-Luc Dubois, Artemi Panarin, and Cam Atkinson has been on fire the last couple of months. And, you know, that second line, after Thomas Vanek was acquired from the Vancouver Canucks, you know, Vanek has been playing with Alex Wenberg and Boone Jenner on that second line, not necessarily a second line that you'd think we'd see from the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, Josh Anderson and Oliver Bjorkstrand started off the season in the top six. Now they're on the third line, but the Blue Jackets are coming in really hot. And, you know, I'm going to go with the Blue Jackets here. I don't feel confident in saying that. I mean, the Capitals were, you know, expecting to go far in the playoffs every year. Obviously, they haven't got by the Penguins in previous years, but there's something about this Blue Jackets team, the way they've come together here the last month or so of the season. I think they're going to upset the Capitals, if you want to call it an upset.
How many games?
I'm going to say Blue Jackets in seven.
Sean?
I'm going to say that a lot of pressure is going to be put on Sergei Bobrovsky. He's got a high potent offense coming at him, which involves the Rocket Richard winning Alex Ovechkin and a, I don't know, is Jonas Korpisalo give you confidence as a backup if you struggle?
No, if Bobrovsky's not their best goaltender, they don't have a chance.
Caps in seven.
There you go. You got a Blue Jackets in seven and a Caps in seven. I'm going to echo my friend Ezra Ginsberg, but I'm going to say it's Blue Jackets in six.
And you should expect some overtimes, because we saw that last year between the Capitals and the Leafs. And this Blue Jackets team, I mean, they're tough to play against, and we know that Washington isn't going to be happy just getting to the playoffs. They have to go far. It might cost Barry Trotz's job.
A lot of pressure.
You know what they say, when you don't have a number one goaltender entering the playoffs, or when you have two number one goaltenders entering the playoffs, that means you don't actually have a number one goaltender. So I think that the uncertainty about Grubauer and Holtby might end up costing the Caps in their first-round playoff matchup. When we come back, we'll quickly shift our focus to the Atlantic Division. Couple series left to go. You're listening to NHL This Week. It's our season, our playoff preview show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is NHL Midweek, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
It's all about starting from scratch and knowing that we're you know, facing a good opponent, and we have to be ready for tough games. So you know, we're looking forward to it. It's a great challenge for us, and that's the way you have to approach it, I think.
Patrice Bergeron of the Boston Bruins talking about their first round playoff matchup against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Welcome back to NHL This Week. One final segment for you on this Tuesday night. It is brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey, and sponsor of the hashtag ICOT Pool. Anytime a playoff game goes to overtime, be sure to use that hashtag. Send your selection as to who you think is going to score in overtime. Only pick one player, and you can win great prizes courtesy Illegal Curve Hockey and Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Remember, it's hashtag ICOT Pool. And for more information of list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Boston and Toronto, the number two seed versus the number three seed in the Atlantic Division. Much like the Jets and the Predators in the second round, one of these two teams should go longer but is going to get knocked out in the first round. Getting a little ahead of myself, I guess, with the Jets and the Preds comment there. How do you see this playoff series between the Leafs and the Bruins shaking out? Looks like it's going to be a dandy to me.
Yeah, guys, I think aside from the Jets Wild Series, this is probably the series that I'm most excited to see. And, you know, the Bruins don't win that last game, and they could have avoided playing the Leafs in the first round. They could have ended up winning the Atlantic Division, but you know, when you look at these two teams and they're pretty even, and you'd probably, you know, give the big advantage to the Toronto Maple Leafs when it comes to offense, but the Boston Bruins were eighth in the league in goals for as well. And the big advantage, I think, for the Boston Bruins is defensively. And Freddie Anderson had a MVP-like season. He's obviously not going to win the Hart Trophy or the Vezina, but if you watch the Leafs this year, I mean, the Leafs gave up a lot of shots. And Freddie Anderson, you know, covered up a lot of the defensive deficiencies that the Leafs had. And, you know, for me, I think, you know, this series has to go at least six games, maybe even seven games. And, you know, the Boston Bruins are such a great story because I think the expectations for them weren't really high this year. But, you know, Brad Marchand, Patrice Bergeron, David Pastrnak, I mean, that might be the best line in the entire league.
Bruce
if
Cassidy
not,
should get Jack Adams consideration. He's done a great job.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, Rick Nash had some injury problems, guys, after he was acquired. But, you know, he's healthy and ready to go. He's playing on that second line with David Krejci. It looks like Jake DeBrusk, the rookie forward, is also going to be on that second line. And, you know, it's nice to see Zdeno Chara at his age still contributing. Charlie McAvoy looks like he's going to be back and healthy. Tuukka Rask has had an excellent season. And we know that Toronto was led by Austin Matthews, and JVR's had a nice 30-plus goal season here. So, you know, when you're looking for those advantages, I mean, both of these teams have great power plays. The Boston Bruins have the better penalty kill. They were third overall in the league. They were the only team that was top five in both power play and penalty kill. So you maybe give the you definitely give the special team advantage to the Boston Bruins. So, I mean, I'm going to go with the Boston Bruins in seven, but I could easily see the Leafs winning the series, too.
Do the Leafs have a 4-1 lead in that seventh game with about 5 minutes to go?
I hope not.
Johnny, how do you see this series playing out?
I'm really excited for this series as well. A lot of young talent, some of the league's premier players going at it. Expect Austin Matthews, Zach Hyman, William Nylander to get a healthy dose of the Patrice Bergeron shutdown line. So that'll be a tough task for Austin Matthews and his first taste of postseason action in the, second year in the NHL.
Yeah.
Second taste. But as you brought up, the defense for the Bruins, and yeah, it looks like it's going to be a real exciting series. And when you're comparing the roster, I talked about the youth, like the Patrice Bergeron, Brad Marchand, David Pastrnak line is unbelievable. When you look at the youth in the forward group of the Bruins, a Jake DeBrusk, a Danton Heinen, Ryan Donato, the college signing, these are guys that can be impact player. Tim Schaller, guys that have made some impact plays down the home stretch. And I think the Leafs have a handful. I think it's going Boston in seven.
Boston in seven. I'll make it a clean sweep, Boston in seven as well. I just think that the defensive structure of the Bruins is going to be too much for the Leafs to completely overcome with their offensive firepower.
Just quickly, Drew, I know we've got one series to get to here. Torrey Krug is a guy that I think everyone knew going into the season was an excellent offensive defenseman, but I think we've seen his all-around game really mature, and he's turned into a bona fide top-pairing guy. He's obviously not on the top pair of the Bruins, but for me, Torrey Krug has to be given a shout-out here. He's had an excellent year.
One comment from each of you about the Lightning Devils series as we have very little time left as we're approaching the end of the show tonight, and we have Blue Jays baseball coming up right after us, where Aaron Sanchez has got a no-hitter in the seventh inning right now. So a quick comment on the Devils-Lightning series. Seems like it should be a mismatch, but the Devils won the head-to-head battle against the Lightning this season.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be a sweep, guys. I mean, it might happen, but you know, I think the Devils are going to make it a series. I have the Tampa Bay Lightning winning this series, and I don't think anybody was going to be happy to play the Lightning, Sean, in the first round. And, you know, Taylor Hall had an incredible season, as we all know, but, you know, they got big-time contributions from Nico Hischier, who had an excellent rookie season, and, you know, they acquire Patrick Maroon at the trade deadline, along with Michael Grabner, and, you know, this team has been, probably with the exception of the Colorado Avalanche, the biggest surprise of the season. John Hines has done an excellent job there, but I just don't think they're going to be able to hold off the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, Steven Stamkos, Nikita Kucherov, I mean, we know all of the names there, guys. And, you know, acquiring Ryan McDonagh prior to the trade deadline, you know, just makes a good defense even better with Victor Hedman, Anton Strahlman, Mikhail Sergachev. So I have the Lightning winning the series in six games. I think the Devils are going to win a couple games, but this Lightning team is, with the exception of maybe the Jets and the Predators, probably the deepest team in the league.
Shawnee?
Yeah, just looking at the depth of the Devils, I don't think it matches up very well with the Lightning, just a superior team from a roster perspective, and a lot of pressure on Nico Hischier, rookie centerman, going to his first NHL playoffs, and we'll see how he can handle the ebbs and flows of the attack of the Lightning throw at him. Also, it's Keith Kincaid, not Corey Schneider, so yes, that'll be an interesting thing to watch going forward.
Similar
into the play.
To Washington with Grubauer. With Grubauer overtaking Holtby.
So Keith Kincaid going to have to pull away from the Chipotle and going on dates with Chipotle with girls and going to have to focus on some playoff hockey. I have the Lightning in five.
You have the Lightning in five. I have the Lightning in six as well. I think the Devils give them a longer series than a lot would expect, but something about Taylor Hall and the magical season that he's been on, I think, continues for at least a couple of the games in that first round. Stanley Cup finalists, quickly.
I got Nashville versus Columbus.
Nashville versus Columbus, and the winner is?
I'll go Nashville.
Okay, Sean?
I'm going to go Nashville, Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And I got the Pens taking it.
I'm going to go with Nashville and the Lightning, and I have the Predators taking it. So it seems like there's a lot of confidence in the Nashville Predators in this room. That's it for the playoff preview edition of NHL This Week. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support them because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Great job on the behind the board for producer Rory. In case you missed any of the show, it's available on our website, illegalcurve.com, and wherever you get your podcasts, get it sent to your device each and every week. Until Saturday at 9 a.m., we wish you good night and good luck. Stay tuned for Blue Jays baseball. Sanchez with a no-hitter through seven.
This is NHL Midweek,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.